walk around with an ideal picture, and that picture becomes basically the Barbie standard. We're getting away from it a little bit more, but you know, if you took a Barbie doll and you blew her up into life-size proportions, she'd fall over. It's just not even anatomically correct. So when we have an impression that's shoved at us in every app that we can access on our phone, and then in our Netflix feed, in our television station, on magazines, any place that's a flat surface that we are now looking at is now this impression of reality that isn't even real.
God is winking, friends. It is not by chance, nor is it a coincidence, that you are listening to High Heels, High Hopes podcast on the America Out Loud Network. This is Kelly Murphy, your passionate host, gifting you with a human interest story that is sure to inspire your spirit. It's the perfect day to talk about the perfect topic with the most perfect guest. I am so excited to have the Kathy Schisler joining us today to talk about all things perfectionism. Welcome, Kathy, to our High Heels, High Hopes podcast.
Hi, Kelly. Nice to be on High Heels, High Hopes with you today.
So excited to talk to you. You know, I'll never forget the day that I met you. I was networking with the Working Women of Tampa Bay, one of the most premier networking groups here in the Florida area. And I remember feeling so intimidated walking through a sea of just professional, executive, gorgeous, perfectly dressed, perfectly coiffed, perfect communicators, all these perfect entrepreneurs surrounding me. And I remember meeting you at this networking event, and here we are, gosh, I don't know, what, 5-6 years later, still talking.
Yes, at least. Yes.
I love it.
It was totally worth our time.
Well, I remember having a mentor once who said to me, you know what direction in your life, in your career that you want to go, and find people who are doing it and follow them. Talk to them, ask them questions. And I remember meeting you very impressed by your dynamic personality. And she's a keynote speaker, everyone. She coaches executives, teams, and focuses on emotional intelligence utilizing the core multi-awareness profile tool. And I remember just feeling so intimidated by you, but now I'm so thrilled to know that you're not as perfect as I thought you were.
Oh my goodness, I am probably the antithesis of perfect.
aren't we all?
I've got a very big closet with a whole lot of stories inside.
Yes, well, and we all do. And that's really my hope today in this conversation is to debunk a couple of myths that are out there around perfectionism. The reality is, it's just impossible to be perfect. So I thank you for being vulnerable, real and raw, and sharing your story. One of the things I want to talk to you about is you recently published an article which kind of spurred my idea on the topic of perfectionism, which you posted on LinkedIn. The title of it was "You Need to Be More." And what really stuck out to me is you shared a personal story of an individual that you were giving some coaching feedback on, some constructive feedback, and you gave her some feedback in relation to just being more casual and more relaxed, and she came back with you with a surprising response, which was what?
I sit back right now and I look at this person was trying to actually be more professional. And it's funny, she had hyped herself up that way back when she was called flighty. And this was back in junior high and high school.
Wow.
And she took that sentence and she created a garment out of it, as if it was a uniform that she had to put on every single day.
Oh my gosh.
And what was so profound was when we were doing an interview back and forth, what made there such to be a disconnect between her trying to do an interview with me and me being a comfortable interviewee was that she was too professional.
Mm, amazing.
And my feedback, it was. And that when we step back, it's looking at, wow, what uniform were you trying to wear? Because in her attempt to be more professional, it completely stifled the tattoo of who she actually is, which
absolutely
is fun and energizing and not stuffy and not, quote unquote, too professional.
Absolutely. You know, so many of us do that. We armor up, we suit up, we put on the perfect hairdo and the perfect makeup and the perfect suit and the perfect outfit with the perfect purse and the perfect shoes. And I think I already said the perfect shoes. And the reality is we're armoring up and we're not being our true selves. And I see this a lot in my personal life as well as in corporate America. And the reality is that it all stems from a belief system. I do this little activity with people when I speak, and I'm going to do it with you in the audience here, and I want you to fill in the blank. Practice makes fill in the blank.
Practice makes, and then the obvious answer is the perfect, right?
Right. But, so
yeah,
our whole lives we hear practice makes perfect. I know what you were going to say because you're a coach. Practice makes.
Well, I know I had to stop better.
It
I just
makes
stopped and said, well, practice makes better. It's funny. I was actually, my daughter, she's 3 now, and she developed something in her neck over last week. And we had to take her into the doctor, and they didn't have the first idea what it was. And I was at church on Sunday, and I was relaying the story. And somebody looked at me, and they said, you know, that's why they call it practice. A doctor practices medicine. Because they don't always get it right.
Yes, I love that. It's
and
so true.
That was timely.
Yeah, very timely and very simple. But we hear this message. I've heard it my whole entire life. Practice makes perfect, Kellyanne. Practice makes perfect. Boy, I practiced and practiced and practiced and tried to find perfectionism, and it eluded me my whole entire life. Here's another one. If you can't do it right, fill in the blank.
Try again.
Ooh, see, yes, you're definitely a coach. But the rest of us are going to say, don't do it at all, right? My whole life, my
father
used to say to me, if you can't do it right, don't do it at all.
Okay.
I know, but these are things that messages we hear our whole lives.
Oh, my gosh. See, now I hear that, and I automatically think of my clients who profile in the lower left-hand side of the brain. With an overdeveloped, what's called an overdeveloped organizer. And that rationale of that statement comes from, it's been proven to not work, so don't be inefficient and waste your time.
Interesting. I do want to plug real quickly, my parents are my biggest fans, and I'm not knocking you, Dad and Mom, but these were messages I heard my whole entire life. Here's another one. If you want it done right, do it yourself.
Ouch.
No wonder why I became a martyr who was seeking perfectionism my entire life.
Oh, my gosh, right.
Still suffering it. But, you know, the point of the exercise is that we have to be very careful of the messages that we hear. We create beliefs around these things. And so many of us, I know for myself, I am a recovering perfectionist. I have struggled with perfectionism my entire life. And even still today, I was working out this morning, and I'm looking in the mirror as I'm working out, and I'm grabbing my waist as if I had something to grab, which is the most ridiculous thing. But my body image comes from my struggle with perfectionism. And I still to this day notice behaviors that scream perfectionism. 2008, I was getting divorced, and I sat in my therapist's office, and she looked at me and she said, you're a perfectionist. And I proudly put my shoulders back and said, yes, I am, as if it were a badge of honor.
Right.
What are some of the pitfalls of perfectionism from your perspective, working with clients and leaders out there?
Well, okay. First of all, I've done about 25 profiles using the CORE multi-awareness assessment in the last 3 weeks. And I am so amazed at perfectionism jades the sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
We say that again. Perfectionism jades the sense of security. And people take a look at measurements. They look at numbers, statistics, and facts. And what they do is, like any good statistician, they make those facts tell them the story they most want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be based on hiding the irrational fear that they really don't have control.
Yeah.
And so what I've seen in about 5 different clients is they grew up poor. And in their current life, they've chosen the most conservative industries, you know, banking, insurance, financial planning, if you will. And they're doing very well right now, but they still live their life in the story of, I will never be poor again. Mm. Therefore, I have to be absolutely controlling. And perfectionism in my finances is how I will attain that.
Wow.
And what ends up happening is they've mastered the muscle of being, quote unquote, perfect in their budget. But what it costs them is their upper right brain development, which is, I matter, number one, without needing proof and facts. Number two is, because I matter, I need to learn how to have fun. I need to learn how to play. I need spontaneity. And everybody has that area in their brain. But if you tell it it's wrong enough times, then your brain is going to have a very hard time going there and building that skill. So it's that would be probably the most immediate example of needing to be perfect.
Absolutely.
In order to subdue the sense of fear out of poverty.
It's fascinating. You know, one of the words that I hear you say several times in that example is fear. And I talk a lot about fear because I truly believe that at the core of all of the things that we desire and want most in our lives is on the other side of fear. And the truth is that perfectionism, what I've come to learn is that it is fear of my being worthy enough. I always thought it was a badge of excellence that I took pride in everything that I did. And what I realized, and boy, that was a really difficult journey to walk through, because my whole entire life I thought I was just a hard worker, I was dedicated, I was all about excellence. But the truth is that I had a fear of worthiness, that I was not good enough, I wasn't smart enough. And the truth is that perfectionism is also a form of shame. Are you familiar with Dr. Brené Brown?
Yes. I love Dr. Brené Brown.
I heart Dr. Brené Brown. She is absolutely amazing. She's a shame researcher. And when people hear that word shame, they usually cringe. It just gives us a visceral reaction. But shame, perfectionism is a form of shame. I am not worthy enough. I am not smart enough. I am not good enough. And it's killing us. When we talk about perfectionism, what are some of the manifestations? How does it show up in our lives in terms of our relationships and our careers? And how does it stifle what we're trying to achieve?
Well, when you asked me that question, I think that I'm gonna circle the airfield for a moment, and I promise I'll land. It's another way of saying, I'm about ready to give you a really long-winded answer. So first and foremost, most of us are walking around with a quilted identity of ourselves. In other words, we take little pieces of patchwork, and then we sew them up. And again, like a nice robe, we put it on our body as a uniform to try and tell people who we are or who we're not. And we don't necessarily stop and think whether or not this is true. So, for instance, if I've got one new lady signed on with me last week, and she's in her late 20s. She's in a very high-paced career in the events and meeting industry. And this person is finding themselves to be flustered. Now, they told me this amazing heroic story about how they got through 320 events in the last 6 months with no manager. And all of it was a success to the point that all the clients were happy. And yet this individual is feeling like she's a failure.
Mm.
So if I, again, take a look at the facts and say, how is it possible that you are failing when we take a look at you completed 320 events, 6 months, new to the job, without a leader. And it was the training of, hey, as much time as you're giving to the prosecution about why you stink, we need to stop and give just as much time over to the defense about why maybe you don't, about why maybe it was really hard, but that didn't, it didn't show an indication of you being broken or wrong or something being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a professional standpoint, It's about helping people see where they are irrational or emotional in their perspective of what they're seeing. Another one is intelligence. I'm always talking to clients who are ashamed or feel lacking or not enough in intelligence. And what they've learned or what they picked up, or that little piece of patchwork that they put on their little uniform of shame, if you will, mm-hmm. was that I'm not intelligent enough, or I'm not brilliant enough, or I'm too goofy. Whatever the words were to associate with their capability to use their brain, that right there becomes some perfectionism. Never let them see that you're goofy. Mm-hmm. Never let them see that you're not smart. Never let them, quote unquote, see that you're stupid.
Social mask. We put this mask on because we want people not to see the true side of us. Why do you think we're so afraid and have so much fear around people seeing the real us, the raw, real, vulnerable us?
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Way back to 2011, I had, I'm going to go here for a second, if that's all right. I had an encounter with God, and I wasn't particularly a Christian at the time. I was leading a very socially bad life, if anybody were to look behind the scenes. And on one particular day, I found myself screaming at God about all the bad things I've done in my life. And like any good parent, he waited for the tantrum to end before he spoke. But when he spoke, he said, "You are mine. You are my value. It doesn't matter what you did in your past. It doesn't matter what you're doing now. And there's nothing you will ever do in the future to take that away. You don't have a choice. You're valuable." And at that moment, it was shocking. It was shocking to even try and conceive that my activities or my lack of activities didn't matter, that God chose me, loved me, and told me, without a choice, you have value. Then he said, "Will you receive it?" Now, that was the epitome of whoa, because at that moment, I decided, yes, I will receive it. I'll stop asking for forgiveness. I'll stop asking for grace, and I'll finally receive it. And it was at that time then that he started to show me what people do from a very young age is they're fine. They're good. They're just who they are. They're just being who he made them to be. And then measurement comes in. Then I have to try and be a good girl for mom and dad or try from being a bad boy to mom and dad. And then that continues in the school environment. And then that continues in their community environment. And life goes on. And we never repack this suitcase to say, wow, my identity, number one, isn't my deeds, maybe my credibility, mm-hmm. but not my identity.
Yeah.
That my worth never had a measure, ever.
Wow.
There's no way to measure it. It just is.
It just is. It's really powerful. You know, in the research that Dr. Brené Brown speaks about, and I know you know this, and she talks about the difference between shame and guilt. And shame is really, I am, fill in the blank. And that's where we start to, it's actually Satan's stamp of approval. Satan wants us to believe that I am fat, I am not worthy, I am not smart enough, I'm not good enough. And she compares shame to guilt, which is I did something that was not good. I did something that was morally incorrect. And when we see the distinction between I am versus I did, it can really get us outside of our head to recognize that we are good, that the core of us is good. We do things that are infallible and imperfect and wrong, and we make mistakes, and there's gifts in all of those imperfections and those mistakes.
Absolutely. Every deed is an opportunity to stand in a fire and take off the lag. You know, back in the medieval times when they would go ahead and wield a sword, the wielding part of it was that they had to take this raw metal that they had just poured, and they had to put it in a 1200 degree hot fire in order to pound on it, and the impurities fell away in the fire.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens here, is that your trials or your deeds or your activities are the opportunity for you to sift through to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the best you, if you're willing to receive the best you, then the months of coaching are how to go ahead and understand what survival living looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm surviving in my career. I'm surviving in my marriage. I'm surviving in my church community. You know, I'm surviving as a fraud, putting on this robe and this mask. And so that's where that real challenge comes in, is accepting that we are not our own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's something that my identity of myself actually isn't true.
Right.
But it's time for me to exchange the value, and the value gets exchanged only when I'm in agreement with the one that created me.
Absolutely. Interesting. Wow. Yeah, you know, perfectionism is it's a defense mechanism. It is just our way of trying to protect ourselves. And the reality is that when we walk down that path, it leads really to a dark place. Most people don't understand this, but when we are so focused on being perfectionists and we focus on everything being perfect, it's highly correlated with things like depression, anxiety, addiction, and can really paralyze our lives and can impact.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was going through my divorce, I remember, of course, I was pointing the fingers at him. It was his fault. He cheated, he lied, he deceived. And when I finally opened my eyes to the idea that maybe it was all of my perfectionist ways, and I was very difficult to live with because everything had to be perfect. If you walked into my home at any given point in time, everything was perfect. There wasn't a speck of dust or dirt anywhere to be found. And this leads me to ask the question, and I've often wondered this, do you think, or do you know, are women more susceptible to perfectionism than men? You know, we have all these responsibilities. We're working women, entrepreneurs, raising children, we're mothers, daughters, sisters, cousins. You know, we have all these roles and responsibilities. Do you feel like women are more susceptible to it, or are men equally?
Well, I'm really glad that you put the word feel, because that's about what I can give you on it, is a feeling and not a white paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But here's my response to that. No, I don't think that women are more susceptible than men. Here's what I think. I think that women societally have been given a role to be nurturers and to care for their household. And we're in a time where we can't afford, the majority of the population cannot afford to be a one income earning home. So in order for the bills to get paid, the kids to get raised, and the house to be in order, then the role that the woman takes on makes it so that she spread very, very thin. And it doesn't help when I see all of these photoshopped impressions of people's life on Pinterest, lifestyle blogs, all the hacks. And we see these people who, behind the scenes, you know, they're showing you a little photo shoot snapshot of something that got orchestrated.
Right.
And we don't stop and consider the other 99% of the chaotic time and what that woman's life actually looks like. But we walk around with an ideal picture, and that picture becomes basically the Barbie standard. I think we're getting away from it a little bit more, but you know, if you took a Barbie doll and you blew her up into life-size proportions, she'd fall over. It's just not even anatomically correct. So when we have an impression that's shoved at us in every app that we can access on our phone, and then in our Netflix feed, in our television station, on magazines, any place that's a flat surface that we are now looking at is now this impression of reality that isn't even real.
Yes.
Now, there's an entire other story for men today, and they are just as susceptible to perfectionism as anybody else, but their story is gathered around the role that they play in society. So susceptible? Nah. More so than men? I don't believe so. And are we striving to be perfect? Absolutely. That's the view that we get, that we should be all you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And being all you could be is getting it, quote-unquote, right and image-worthy so that you can own your own lifestyle mag everywhere.
Absolutely.
It's not real.
It's not real, and it is very difficult in our society today. I worry about, you know, you have a daughter, I have a daughter, I have a son, you have a son, children, it doesn't matter, boy, girl. I worry because they are so inundated with all of these messages. The other day we were having a conversation, and actually I was listening, the kids were talking about, I had a 90-day streak, and I have 199 followers. You only have 199 followers? What? And they're talking about all these numbers and comparing each other to how many followers and how many likes and how many streaks they had. And I just laughed and I listened. But it really wasn't, I wasn't laughing inside. It really broke my heart because one of the other things about perfectionism and our society in general is the biggest thief to happiness, and you know this, is comparison. And when we have all of these images and all of these measurements and all of these things that we're comparing one another to, it does leave us feeling like, wow, you know, I'm just not good enough. And, you know, I want to go back to my original, how I set this conversation up, walking into a networking group, you know, thinking, my gosh, all these professional, entrepreneurial, smart, brilliant women, I just don't compare. And the truth is that once you walk into that into the midst of the fear and the vulnerability, you realize, I think two of the most powerful words are me too. I have also experienced that. And when you start to open yourself up to speaking to individuals that you think are untouchable, you realize they have a story also, and they too feel the same things you feel also.
I love your two sentence key, the me too. And that's what I found when I was going through that time in life, where I was literally brought to my knees. I thought that I was going to be stoned to death by my community and my society. I really thought I might as well go ahead and pack up to some no-name place in, you know, in North Dakota and not exist anymore.
Oh, wow.
But what I found was that people invited me into the vulnerable seat at their table.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me their story. And there was a level of trust that they could tell me their story because my story was so bad that we didn't need to go beyond that space.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was, I found from person after person, I mean, these are people, you know, major newscasters, mm-hmm. Magazine editors and publicists, major CEOs, the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Everybody has a story. Everybody. Nobody gets to not have problems.
Mm-mm.
Everybody has problems. And nobody gets it right all the time. So everybody has an opportunity to share their guilt story. And they also then share, like you said, the shame story.
Mm-hmm.
So that me too is key. Now, I'd rather leave your listeners or leave our listeners with another tool like that. Okay, this is all nice, but so what, right? It's great that I can feel normal, but now how do I move forward? And in the work I've been doing with people, what we find is that when we do find this little shining moment where this person didn't need to have to be anything, they just were oozing out God's DNA of who he made them to be, that we found about five little attributes. I call them your essence attributes. And that when those people are not judging themselves or not feeling judged by the rest of the world, A, they have an intelligence. B, the world is magnetized to them. C, they have an energy that's flowing out of them. D, they are at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say peace, some people say joy. And E, or five, they are thinking about how to care for other people. They are consciously thinking about their contribution right here, right now. And when they're being exactly who God has made them to be in his version of it, they are unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
That exactly who he made them to be is exactly what the world needs right there. And it's not comparable. It's absolutely not comparable because it's not measurable.
Yeah, it's shifting, you know, a mindset. It's shifting your beliefs that you've had your whole entire life and this story that you have attached yourself to. That can be very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. it's very difficult, you know. And so when you stop and say, wow, when's that moment I was in the zone? When was the last time I was in my zone? And I share with my clients, you know that you were there because you're not in it anymore and you're looking back at it.
Yeah.
And you're saying, that was awesome. What was that?
Right.
And when you examine that moment or those bubbles along your past, the secrets are going to come out. Those secret moments of, wow, I wasn't perfect. I wasn't trying to be. I wasn't even thinking. I was just being.
Mm-hmm.
And when people can unlock those bubbles and articulate them, now what I can compare is me trying to play so that I don't lose to just being. When I can go ahead and identify, wow, I'm in my cave right now, or I'm trying to justify not being somebody I'm already not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that again. The last 3 weeks this came out, this was a divine sentence. Stop trying to be who you already aren't.
Mm. Wow.
That's where the perfectionism comes in.
It does. It does. It reminds me of a quote I once heard, and I'll massacre it here because I don't remember exactly how it went, but something to the effect of, we become who we are by accidentally trying to be something else. So we're trying to strive to be someone and something else, and then we actually become something different in that attempt to be something. This idea of being is a really big challenge, I feel like, for people. You've been speaking about it a lot. When you say being, what do you really mean? Because we're so focused on being human doers, not human beings, always going from one activity to the next activity and trying to break through this glass ceiling as women and achieve and accomplish and make money and have power and that we have lost the art of just being and accepting what is as is. So how does somebody just be? You speak about it, but how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I think that the being part is an adjective that describes what comes out of you and what your orientation is when you're truly focused on helping the world around you. And when you're no longer focused on yourself, and you're not in an introspection time or reflection time or a journaling time, but you are engaged in a relationship with at least one or more other people, and you're truly in that space where you are contributing in that space. When that happens, and you're not focused on yourself, right, you're just existing, if you will, and the best of what's inside of you is coming out. No choice. You don't have a choice. So to get to then the being is the moment you're outside of that bubble. Now all of a sudden we're back in introspection. Now all of a sudden we're reflecting. Now we've got to compare what just happened in that moment with my story or my proclaimed identity of who I'm not, or who I'm trying never to be, or who I'm trying to always be. And in order to continue getting closer to that being, it comes in grace and mercy. To say, wow, you know what? I have a decision to make. Either I'm stupid or I'm brilliant. But both truths can't coexist. In the being part, I do think that the hard, heavy lifting are the decisions that you have to make to come into agreement with the value that's sitting in front of you, that you could offer the world.
Right.
So when I sit there and I do the exercise with clients and I say, okay, which one is it, stupid or brilliant? You'd be amazed. It takes some people an hour to make the decision.
Wow.
It does. And you say, okay, well, they say, well, I'm brilliant. Okay, well, you're telling me that because you think you should say that. And so we have to work through the have-tos and the shoulds and the need-tos and the musts before we break free that they're brilliant because they are.
Yeah.
Period. That's it. And only when people make the decision to give themselves grace and mercy and to come into agreement with the best possible truth, they won't be beings, they'll be doers, trying to be.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, and that's so exhausting. I'm still fighting with the being. Have only recently entered into trying to work on meditation skills, which is very challenging for me because my brain is always going. I'm addicted to thinking. I'm addicted to doing. And it certainly is an area of improvement for myself. What I really hear you saying is that shame resilience requires, you know, to avoid perfectionism, it really requires a deep level of critical awareness. And the only way that we can understand our beliefs and where we're headed and why we do the things that we do, and to be in that moment of being is to really just quiet the brain and to stop, just stop the insanity and stop the doing and just really understand what our behaviors are and where they stem from and what our beliefs are about ourselves and how did we adopt those beliefs? Where did they come from? They came from somewhere.
They did. And part of what I would share with you is you're not going to stop thinking, I don't think. And I have a degree in social work. And something that I actually learned back in my degree program was to not tell the bad voices to shut up. It's actually the worst you could possibly do is try and keep your brain from going to that negative place. What you need to do is go to war against it. Let it come up. But now have it out with it.
Right.
Let that voice come up. Let your brain think. Come on, get it out. What happens is the brain will go ahead and tuck all that programming away and just bring it up later.
Yeah.
So the way that you overcome that is, no, let it out. Speak it all out. Get it out. Because now that I know who the enemy is, now I can fight it. If it keeps on hiding and being told to shut up, don't think, you know, just go with the flow, then it's going to go hide. And it's going to go hide in that emotional part of the brain, which was put there when we were highly emotional to begin with.
All right. That's an excellent point.
So there's something here, and this is why I choose the emotional intelligence side, is we have this amazing technology called the amygdala.
Mm-hmm.
And the amygdala is in that limbic part of the brain, and it was put there so that we could survive, interestingly enough. And what happens is when we perceive a threat, then cortisol starts to shoot up out of our kidneys, goes to the amygdala, and tells our brain, hey, you are in a threatening position. And it's only when we get back to stasis, you know, well, let me tell myself this, that our brain can calm down, and then we can have oxygen flow up into the higher cortex, the more complex area of the brain for more complex problem solving. So the way that you have to deal with this is you have to first stop and say, hold on, thank you for the alert technology called emotion, but now I need to articulate it. What exactly am I feeling? And let me bring my big girl panties to the table.
I love that. Oh, I love
right?
big guy. Yes, ma'am.
So you're handing me a diaper. I appreciate that. But let me take a look at my big girl panties and compare the two. And now let me go forward with strength. Let me choose.
Absolutely. I love, you know, there's a lot on this emotional intelligence. I love that you do this work because what do they say that there's a percentage out there, statistics show that over 58% of your productivity in the workplace or your success in the workplace is based around your emotional intelligence. Is that?
I would agree with that. You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure what the latest statistic is, but I will tell you that when this term emotional intelligence started coming up, it came from some of the motor companies. They were finding that they were hiring some of the most intelligent people out there in the world, and yet they were underperformed by the quote-unquote average person with the average IQ. Well, what they found was that 83% of the highest performers were emotionally intelligent. And when I do this with folks, 9 out of 10 people can't even tell me what their last 10 emotions were in the last 24 hours.
Wow.
Positive or negative.
Wow.
They can't accurately identify the emotion, which means that a huge percent of people are walking around on emotional autopilot, much like our smartphones use us.
Yep.
Yeah, they run us now. Well, the technology is running us.
Absolutely.
So until we stop and learn how to run the technology, it's running us. We're on autopilot, except for those few moments where you stop and go into introspection, reflect, and make some choices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Emotional intelligence, where it's at. Boy, I'll tell you, everyone, this is an excellent conversation. Kathy, I could talk about it all day long. What's awesome, and I want to share this with the audience, is that obviously your daughter was perfect today.
Oh my gosh, she has a
3-year-old in the background while she's juggling her career and doing it all. And we started the conversation off before we started recording, talking about if there's some background noise. So we told her to be perfect, and she was. What a good girl.
Yeah, she's good. And I will confess, I'm in the backyard, so it's gooser sounds. We had an army helicopter go over, 2 dogs bark, and there are chickens in my background.
Oh, I love it.
My neighbor has chickens.
So, you know, here's the deal, folks. Nothing is perfect. Nothing is perfect at all. Understand that perfectionism does not exist. Nothing is perfect. And don't even strive to be it, because you will turn out to be making yourself more crazy than anything. Perfectionism is not excellence. Perfectionism is not self-improvement. And it's not the key to success either. It's really just hurting you. So I want to thank you, Kathy. How do people find you? The work that you do on emotional intelligence, I'll tell you, is just brilliant. And clearly, by the stories and everything that you shared, you know your stuff. So how do people get in touch with you?
You know, at this time, I'd really love for them to check out destinationbreakthrough.com. It's a website. It is not perfect, so, you know, warning up ahead, but that's one way that they can connect. I would also love for the audience to go to my LinkedIn profile to go see the articles that have been getting posted up there. And my name is Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, and you find me under Potts Schisler, P-O-T-T-S-S-C-H-I-S-S-L-E-R. So those are two great ways, or you can email me, Kathy@destinationbreakthrough.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time, Miss Kathy Potts Schisler. I remember you from the Kathy Potts days. But that's awesome. So thank you again for your time. And I do want to leave everyone too with something that Dr. Brené Brown speaks a lot about. She wrote a book called The Gifts of Imperfection. It's an excellent book if you suffer from perfectionism like many of us do. But one of the things that she shared as a tool in the book that I often use is she says something to herself. It's like a mantra. She has a ring that she has on her finger, and she turns it 3 times. And each time she turns it, she says, "Don't shrink. Don't puff up. Stand your sacred ground." And I love that. Mm. And I use that all the time, because sometimes when we feel vulnerable or we're afraid, we don't feel like we measure up with people, we kind of shrink and we become chameleons and we blend in and we're not our true authentic selves. And then the don't puff up, you know, don't be arrogant coming to the table with "I'm doctor this and I have this degree," and I you know, and we puff up and we start using our credentials our titles and our credentials is something to be excited about. And then, you know, just stand your sacred ground. Know who you are. Be you. Be authentic. Be real. Be raw. Make mistakes. Fail it up. And guess what? We'll be fine. There's gifts in all of these imperfections. So thank you. My biggest hope is that we get rid of this desire and need to be perfect, and we just be real with one another. Me too. Two of the best words I've ever heard.
Yeah,
high heels, high hopes. I love it too. Thank you, Kathy. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. And everybody have a perfectly imperfect day.